From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The White House appears to be siding with Israel in its assessment that Iran has lied about the extent of its nuclear weapons program. Presidential spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders said the 2015 Iran nuclear deal was made of what she called an entirely false pretense.
The deal was made under false pretenses, problematic, but the president's been very clear that he thinks the deal is one of the worst that we've ever seen, and we'll keep you posted when he's made a final decision on that front.
Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Monday made public a large trove of documents he said came from Iran's secret atomic archives. The presentation came less than 2 weeks before Mr. Trump is to decide whether to end sanctions relief on Tehran. Other signatories to the deal made a different conclusion. EU Foreign Policy Chief Federica Mogherini said there is no evidence Tehran has violated the agreement.
What I have seen from the first reports is that Prime Minister Netanyahu has not put in question Iran's compliance with the JCPOA commitments, meaning post-2015 nuclear commitments.
British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson, meanwhile, said the Israeli presentation underscored the importance of keeping the Iran nuclear accord. At least 16 people, including a priest, were killed, scores of others wounded Tuesday, when unidentified gunmen attacked the Notre Dame de Fatima Church in Bangui, capital of Central African Republic. Parishioner Marie Madeleine Penda said everyone began running. She said a woman nearby was shot in her feet and she saw others wounded. The attack occurred close to the predominantly Muslim PK5 neighborhood, which was the object of a recent deadly joint security sweep conducted by UN peacekeepers and local security forces. This is VOA News. Senior Trump administration and trade officials are heading to China for crucial talks aimed at avoiding a trade war over the trade imbalance between the world's top two economies and allegations of Chinese intellectual property theft. Robert Lighthizer, U.S. Trade Representative, spoke to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Tuesday ahead of his trip about reaching an understanding with Beijing.
Well, I'm always hoping, but not always hopeful. So it's a big, big challenge, all right? There's a very different system over there, and it's a system that, in all honesty, probably worked pretty well for the Chinese. And it has not worked well for us, and it's worked for some U.S. companies that have managed to make money there and actually repatriate it. So it's complicated, and it affects almost every part of our economy.
Lighthizer is accompanied by Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, and two White House economic advisors. The administration has threatened tariffs on up to $50 billion in Chinese goods, with Beijing vowing to retaliate. Britain's UN ambassador Karen Pearce Tuesday called for a proper investigation into the security crackdown in Myanmar, also known as Burma, that led to the exodus in recent months of nearly 700,000 Rohingya Muslims.
One can tell stories, and those stories are very moving, but in order to have accountability, you need a proper investigation with evidentiary standards. There are two ways of doing that, basically. One is an ICC, an International Criminal Court referral, as you've said. The second would be for the Burmese government to do that themselves.
Pearce was part of a UN Security Council delegation that ended a visit to the region with a stop in western Rakhine State where widespread atrocities allegedly occurred. De facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi has promised an investigation if credible evidence is provided. U.S. Defense Chief Jim Mattis Tuesday pledged the U.S. will stand by the Afghan people and the government, denounced the murder of 9 journalists among 25 people killed in separate suicide bombings in the capital. He said NATO forces have been successful in blocking many such attacks, but acknowledged some get through. Unknown gunman Tuesday shot dead a female Somali aid worker employed by the World Health Organization in a marketplace in the capital Mogadishu. She's identified as Marianne Abdullahi. President Donald Trump paid tribute Tuesday to the crew of that Southwest Airlines flight that made an emergency landing April 17 after one of its two engines shredded in midair, killing a passenger.
The actions of the crew and passengers of Southwest Flight 1380 show the great character of our nation. We're very, very proud of them, and God bless you all, and thank you very much for being at the White House.
The Boeing 737 was traveling from New York to Dallas with nearly 150 people on board when the left engine disintegrated, sending shrapnel into the fuselage. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya announces a 5% increase in its minimum wage.
In recognition of the good work done by our workers and cognizant of the rate of inflation of 4.8% this year, I hereby at this stage declare a corresponding increase of 5% increase of the minimum wage with immediate effect.
Okoyatani is Kenya's Labour Cabinet Secretary. Ugandan youths complained about the lack of jobs. Sierra Leone's president makes 19 new cabinet appointments. And Cameroon's government accuses separatists of attacking schools in the country's northwest region. And Gabon's prime minister resigns as the Constitutional Court dissolves parliament.
The dissolution of the National Assembly by the Constitutional Court was not constitutional because this is not a right of the court to dissolve the National Assembly.
Paul Marie Gonjo is the Deputy Executive Secretary of the main opposition National Union Party of Gabon, and antibiotic resistance spreads at a shocking rate from animals to humans. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Kenyan government has announced a 5% increase in the minimum wage. Meanwhile, opposition leader Raila Odinga has called for an end to the boycott of products made by selected companies. In a speech read by Labour Cabinet Secretary Okoyatani, President Uhuru Kenyatta called for dialogue to solve ongoing strikes, mostly by civil servants. This comes as most of the civil servants have been demanding improved conditions. Marie Ojiambo reports from Kenya's capital, Nairobi.
The labor that I'm thinking of is the labor that the Kenyans have in trying to job search.
These were some of the feedback from Kenyans immediately after the speeches at Uhuru Park, Nairobi. Most of them felt that however much the increase is, some of the employers are not abiding by it and therefore they still suffer from inflation.
The labor that the Kenyans have with being underpaid, the labor that the Kenyans have with not being able to make ends meet in spite of earning a salary. They can never sustain the lives that their parents had.
The Labor Cabinet Secretary Kuriatani says the increment tape was arrived at following the rate of inflation standing at 4.5 in Kenya this year.
In recognition of the good work done by our workers and cognizant of the rate of inflation of 4.8% this year, I hereby at this stage declare a corresponding increase of 5% increase of the minimum wage with immediate effect.
He adds that workers should reduce the rate of strikes in the country and embrace dialogue to ensure no sector is paralyzed due to strike by the workers, and that increased industrial strike has hurt the rights of many Kenyans.
Fellow Kenyans, over the last 1 year, the country has witnessed an upsurge in industrial unrest, mainly in the public sector. These strikes have caused a lot of anxiety and suffering to many Kenyans, besides tainting the image of the nation. As much as the right to industrial action is a provision of the Constitution, the same should be utilized responsibly with the interests of fellow Kenyans at heart. The tendency to down tools as the first option following any disagreement has hurt the economy and infringed on the welfare of the Mwananchi.
At the same time, the opposition chief Raila Odinga, who attended the ceremony, called on the government to create more employment opportunities for all Kenyans as he lifted ban on some of the classified companies in the country.
Wananchi na wafanyikazi wanadai mshahara yongezwe kwa sababu ya gharama ya
workers are asking for salary increase because of the high inflation rates. Now, even if we add them salary today, rent will go high. Transport cost will increase. High cost of food and school fees. So what is needed is to see how to reduce the transport cost, rent and cost of food. We said our people should boycott goods and services from those companies. Now we are united with Uhuru. We have agreed to work together. So today we lift the ban. We have agreed that now our people can do business with those companies.
On the other hand, the Kenyan Central Organization of Trade Union, KOTU, led by its Secretary General Francis Atwoli, insists that as a union, they will fight for the rights of workers to ensure all employees have a conducive working environment and enhance economic growth of the nation.
We say, let us reason together for sustainable economic growth and job security. That is what we say.
The only way we can create sustainable jobs is to eradicate poverty.
The rise comes a day after Kenyan employers warned against another wage increase, arguing that such a move will hurt an economy that is just beginning to recover from last year's battering. The Kenya Association of Manufacturers Chief Executive Officer Phyllis Wakianga says the industry is yet to swiften following last year's setbacks caused by high inflation rates, drought, and prolonged electioneering period. Maureen Ojiambo, VOA.
As Uganda this week joined the rest of the world to celebrate International Labour Day, many youths in the country say they cannot access jobs. They want the government to make funds available for youth development activities. Florence Nakinwala Kiyingi, the Minister for Youth and Children Affairs, acknowledges the country is grappling with high unemployment. She says one way to curb this is by training young people to become entrepreneurs. Mugumi Davis Raka Ridge reports from Kampala.
21-year-old Emmanuel Semogerele wipes his sweating face on a Kampala street. He looks tired and says he's hungry after walking to many offices looking for jobs without any success. He says he has been doing this since when he completed secondary education in 2016.
I tried to look for a job in painting because I've ever worked there sometime back in my vacation. I couldn't get any job. And now I'm trying to gamble around with farming since it's the rainy season. I don't know any possibilities, any chances which are there because I have a challenge of I can't access land. I can't access most of the materials which is used in farming like the seeds.
Another youth who has been looking for a job without success is 29-year-old Moses Pade. Pade graduated with a bachelor's degree in organization psychology in 2014 from a top university in Kampala, but says getting a job has been difficult.
The bureaucracy is too high. Who knows you? Whose son are you? If you're not known to any office, then you won't get a job. If you don't have money, you won't get a job. Nowadays in Uganda, jobs you have to put in cash. If no one knows you there, and then you have to bribe to get jobs.
Pade says the government should avail youth with funds to set up business ventures.
Come yet, please get the scissors and get your tape measure. I would like you to measure Anita's body so that we can make her a dress. That is what I want you to work on.
At Uganda North American Youth Development Association office in Lubaga, Kampala, tearing instructor Erina Sharon Nakanwaji is a busy woman. She's training young women how to design clothes. One of them is 27-year-old Agnes Nampima, a mother of two.
The future, it's not like the past. The past, we ladies, we are worked for. Men used to give us, but this generation, we have to work for ourselves. So I came here in order to get that skill so that I can do my own business.
After completing secondary school 5 years ago, Nampima could not get a formal employment. She says after this training, she set up a tailoring workshop. Nampima is one of the 100-plus young women that are undergoing the tailoring training. This is one of the centers where the government is giving the youth a chance to vocational skills.
The girls I have here, some are mothers, and they're single mothers, and some did not complete education. Some stopped in P2 or P1. It's good to give them this education so that when they finish here, they're doing a course for 6 months, and they're going to be provided with the machine and some money to go and start as their capital so that they can continue to skill themselves in this and to provide something for themselves and their family.
Florence Nachiwala Chiyinji, the Minister for Youth and Children Affairs, says the government is well aware of the problem.
It is true. There is escalating and shocking figures about unemployment in Uganda. In Uganda, we are proudly talking about 11 million young people between the age of 18 to 30.
She says the government will train youth in skills like carpentry, hairdressing, ICT, catering and entrepreneurship. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
Today's Wednesday, May 2nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Gabon's main opposition, the National Union Party, has accused President Ali Bongo of complicity with the country's constitutional court to dissolve parliament. The court on Monday dissolved the National Assembly because it said President Bongo failed to hold elections to replace parliament. The country's prime minister resigned by orders of the court. Paul Marie Gonjou is the deputy executive secretary of the National Union Party of Gabon. He says the party plans to launch an international campaign accusing President Bongo and the Constitutional Court of staging a coup d'etat in parliament.
The dissolution of the National Assembly by the Constitutional Court was not constitutional because this is not a right of the court to dissolve the National Assembly. The National Assembly, based on the Gabonese Constitution, should be done by decision of the President of the Republic, the head of state, after the consultation of the President of the National Assembly and the Prime Minister. So we don't agree with that decision, and we want to fight it.
But Paul, the court said that it was dissolving the parliament because the president failed to have elections to replace the members of parliament. Isn't that constitutional? Parliamentarians must be elected.
I'm just reading the constitution, okay? What the court said is not in the constitution. It is true that the government failed to organize the legislative election. But it was the duty of the court to say that I cannot dissolve the assembly. You have to take the decision and to act rightly based on the constitutional articles. And they didn't do that.
So, Paul, I'm assuming that you have given me the position of the main opposition leader, Jean Ping. Does he feel the way you are saying it?
No, I'm giving the opinion of the Union Nationale, National Union, which is the main opposition party of the country. So I cannot talk on behalf of Mr. Ping.
So what happens now? Now we hear the Prime Minister had to step down.
The Prime Minister already resigned today, and we are expecting a new government to be in place in the next days. Tomorrow, Union Nationale, the main opposition party, will make a statement to give its position about what the Constitutional Court did yesterday. And also, we are going to do some international actions to ask the international community to see that in Gabon, the Constitutional Court, in fact, in complicity with Mr. Bongo, dissolve the National Assembly and the government also. This decision of the Constitutional Court is not something only coming from the Constitutional Court. It was something set up with Mr. Bongo. Mr. Bongo didn't want to be in front of that decision, so he let the Constitutional Court to take the decision on his behalf, but not officially.
So why would the president want his own parliament to be dissolved?
The Constitutional Court gave the deadline of April 28 for the election to be held in the country to have a new National Assembly. The president and the government took all the time not to organize the elections. Also, the new government coming will not be responsible to the parliament, but only to Mr. Bongo. In fact, the Constitutional Court has just made a kind of coup d'etat to give all the executive powers to Mr. Bongo.
Paul Marie Gonjou is the Deputy Executive Secretary of the National Union Party of Gabon. He was speaking with us from the capital, Libreville. Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio has made 19 new cabinet appointments. Prominent among them are Chief Minister David J. Francis and Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation Minister Ali Kaba, both from the same eastern region as President Bio. Lahai Lawrence Lima, the National Publicity Secretary of the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party, says the cabinet is drawn from every region of the country.
The ministers actually will be responsible to help in the administration and also help the president to achieve or deliver on his promise to the people of this country, that is his new direction policy. So today, a new ministerial appointment actually has come up, which is the chief minister. Professor David Francis is the chief minister. His role actually is to supervise the other ministers to ensure that they deliver on their own sector of job allocated to them in the ministries.
the Chief Minister, Professor David Francis, and the Foreign Minister, Dr. Ali Kaba, are both from the East, where I'm assuming President Julius Maada Bio is from. How representative is this new cabinet in terms of regional representation?
The cabinet presently formed by His Excellency the President has a complete national characteristic. It is drawn from every region of the country. It is an inclusive cabinet that has the national characteristics it takes to be able to unite this country and actually put this country in a very cohesive manner to be able to help development forward in this country. He has actually drawn his ministers from every region of the country and almost every district of the country, which has given his cabinet a national character to be able to ensure that we get national cohesion and national unity.
I was looking at the list of the new appointments. I see a few women, but not as many women.
Well, yes, at least we are actually trying. And of course, we've even gotten a situation where a very senior ministry has been given to a woman. That's the Ministry of Development. Not like before, you would want to say the gender is just want to send women to certain ministry that has been looked at as a ministry that has a specific role for women or certain sex. But then this time around, a whole senior cabinet position has been given to a woman. Tourism is another big ministry in the country which has been given to Mrs. Memunatu Pratt. Memunatu Pratt also has been a very senior lecturer in the University of Sierra Leone, a head of department of the Peace and Conflict Studies. She is an experienced woman, a woman of substance who has also made significant contributions and gains in the country's development.
In the meantime, the opposition APC members of parliament that were forcefully removed from parliament, that have had this court injunction in place against them, are still refusing to return to parliament. The ECOWAS delegation has just left your country. What's the development?
Well, in the first place, nobody has actually denied them not to go to parliament. You have about 53 members of parliament elect who have still yet to take their oath of office. They left the parliament, and the ECOWAS delegation has come to be able to see how best to mediate the impasse that actually occurred in parliament. But at the same time, the Court of the Land is an independent institution, and of which the president or no other governmental body can interfere into the independent operations of the court.
Lahai Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Fresh violence in northwestern Cameroon has forced hundreds of teachers and students from their classrooms. Separatist rebels are targeting schools for not observing calls to strike. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the northwestern town of Ashin, where a Catholic school principal has been kidnapped.
Heavy rains fall as we arrive at St. Bede's School in the English-speaking town of Ashin. Dozens of students are carrying boxes out of the school. 17-year-old student Ambe John is leaving.
I'm going due to what happened in school, and for the sake of my principal, I need to go so he can be rescued.
Armed men attacked the school on Monday, abducting the principal and the school chaplain. Government officials told VOA the two men were targeted by Anglophone separatists for violating instructions to remain closed in support of the Ambazonian independence movement. The chaplain was later released, but the principal has not been found. Godlove Vomi left his home in the nearby French-speaking town of Bafoussam to pick up his son when he got news of the attack.
The matron gave out the information that she come and take our children home.
I'm feeling too bad because I think that with everything, children would have been going to school, at least to see that their future is guaranteed.
Schools in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions, the Northwest and the Southwest, were shuttered for nearly a year, starting in November 2016. Teachers and lawyers were on strike, demanding reforms to address what they say is the marginalization of Anglophones in mostly French-speaking country. Some schools reopened last October, but the crisis has intensified. Late in November, President Paul Biya declared a state of war in the Anglophone regions. The government says at least 30 schools have been attacked this year, with at least a dozen teachers either killed or wounded in the northwest and southwest regions. Hundreds more have fled. Johnson Ito, the most senior education official in the northwest region, says they have been pleading with the teachers to return since the government has deployed the military to protect them.
We are having a personnel of secondary education, especially a school head, shot at in the northwest here. The going is tough. The tough must get going. So what we are trying to do, raise up the morals of those in the field.
Since early 2017, the government has responded forcefully to the unrest in the Anglophone regions. Rights groups say the crackdown, which has included the detention of hundreds of people and, at one point, a three-month internet blackout, inflamed tensions, making dialogue more difficult. The conflict has killed dozens on both sides this year and displaced at least 20,000 people. Moki Edwin Kintika for VOA News, Ashing, Cameroon.
Scientists have expressed shock at the speed at which resistance to powerful antibiotics is able to spread from animals to humans. New research has shown how antimicrobial resistance to a key medicine likely spread from a pig farm in China to affect human and animal species around the world in the space of just a few years. Henry Richwell reports.
Colistin is a medicine of last resort, used to save people's lives when all other drugs have failed.
It was used a bit in the clinic, and then there were some worries about toxicity and side effects. And it was mostly used in agriculture, then in pigs and a bit in chicken. But recently, as we're running out of drugs, people actually have become more interested again in using it. And it's been used quite extensively recently over the last 5-10 years in the clinic.
But even this powerful antibiotic is losing its potency. Deadly pathogens like E. coli or Salmonella can mutate and develop resistance to drugs. The new study, led by Ballou at University College London, identifies the speed at which the mutant gene that gives resistance to colistin emerged in the mid-2000s.
There was a single emergence, only once. It happened once, and it jumped very, very likely from pigs, probably in China. And it spread extremely rapidly throughout the world. And it also spread in all sorts of different species that infect humans. So now we find it in, yes, in many of the most important pathogens we face in hospitals. And it is absolutely everywhere now.
The resistance has even been found in pathogens in the seawater on Brazilian beaches. This study focused on just one resistant gene. Many pathogens are developing other forms of resistance. Britain's chief medical officer warned recently that antimicrobial resistance could lead to the end of modern medicine.
Think about common operations, cesarean sections, replacement hips. Those would become much more risky if we did not have effective antibiotics. Superbugs kill, and they're on the rise.
Scientists are working on boosting existing drugs like colistin to give them added power against resistant pathogens. Longer term, researchers say more investment is needed in developing new drugs, along with rethinking the way antibiotics are used in agriculture and in the clinic. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Gabon's main opposition, the National Union Party, has accused President Ali Bongo of complicity with the country's constitutional court to dissolve parliament. The court on Monday dissolved the National Assembly because it said President Bongo failed to hold elections to replace parliament. And that is it for this Wednesday, May 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clarty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good Wednesday.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari meets with President Donald Trump at the White House on Monday, April 30th. We'll discuss their meeting and current U.S.-Africa relations on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.